Well, true gardeners know that a garden is more than a place to grow plants. And our next guest is going to talk about what her garden means to her and what she and her family put into that garden. She's on the line with us from her home in Toronto. She's an essayist and blogger, and we're talking about her first book. It's called Unearthed, Love, Acceptance, and Other Lessons from an Abandoned Garden. Alexandra Risen, our guest today. What does your garden do for you emotionally? Who was the person in your life who helped you learn to love gardening? What do you take away from gardening? I hope you'll join in that conversation at 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page, and we'd love to hear from you. Alexandra Risen, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Larry.
How's your back?
My back isn't bad. I have a sprained ankle. That's my latest foray into gardening, but back is good.
Oh, boy. Well, that when you went off that, when you injured your back, I thought, oh, my goodness, that's going to hurt for a long time. And it probably still bothers a little bit once in a while. Maybe you can talk about the basic story behind your book.
Absolutely. My husband and I bought a property about 10 years ago, and it fortunately had a sprawling, overgrown garden attached to it. And we weren't expert gardeners at the time, but wanted to take on the challenge. We both grew up with parents who were very big gardeners. We didn't appreciate it, of course, as children, but you know how these things are circular. Mm-hmm. So this just challenge presented itself. And we started slowly over the course of 10 years restoring the garden. It had some historic parts to it, belonged to a retail family in the city in the early 1900s and had changed hands a few times and been let go. There were some stone, beautiful structures on it, a pagoda, a bridge, natural spring-fed ponds, a very arid slope, a bog. So a real challenge for beginner gardeners.
And pretty much right in the city.
Indeed, yes. And Toronto is a special city. It's full of underground rivers and ravines, and there are many river valleys that people have the pleasure of enjoying, even though it's quite an urban environment. So we happen to be on one of those ravines, which is why it's possible to have such a beautiful landscape in the middle of the city.
Yeah, I really liked how you described your transition from first looking at the house and kind of hating it, but then knowing you had to have it. Tell us what changed your mind.
Well, we looked outside off a balcony and saw this expanse of trees. And my mother was starting to fall ill at the time. And I think somewhere deep down in my soul, I wanted to regain a closeness to her, and I thought that the garden could be a way to do that. Even though she wouldn't be in the same city with me, maybe it would be a way to become part of her and explore our relationship a little bit more deeply by doing what she loved to do.
Did you have any idea how long it would take to restore that garden?
Absolutely none. Had we known, I think we would have run away.
And we're talking about, you know, as you talk about it in the book, it sounds like it's 20 acres, but it's really, what, about an acre?
It's about an acre.
It seemed like a whole lot more. And what part did your husband and son play? I really like the parts they played in the quest for the garden space.
My husband loves pruning, so I think he gains immense satisfaction because it's quite immediate. Gardening is such a long-term sport. You never really know the fruits of your labor till the next season or so on. But the one thing that gives you immediate gratification, of course, is pruning. So he quite likes that. My son is a reluctant gardener. He is 17 years old now and grew up in the age of technology. And anyone out there, I'm sure, with teenagers can relate that they become quite obsessed with their gadgets. And so for me, the garden was a way to bring him back to nature and put some balance into his life. So I would have us forage for things and make lemonade with sumac. We have two sugar maples, so we tapped our maples and made syrup. And it was my way of trying to communicate to him that he has to know where food comes from other than the grocery store. And I think I was 50% successful.
I think you were pretty successful. You got him away from his iPhone or whatever he had.
Yeah.
And out and spending quite a bit of time out in the outdoors.
Yes, in fairness, he's now a camper and a hiker. And he actually taught me a lesson, because over the years I was saying to him, I'm trying to balance out your technology. And in the end, he took up photography and he took up scuba diving, both which use technology to actually get us closer to nature. So while I was trying to give him balance one way, he taught me how technology allows us to, in many ways, explore nature in ways we never could 50 years ago or 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So we both learned from each other, which was a lovely consequence that I didn't expect.
Yeah, and certainly in terms of helping you to learn more about your family, that he played a role in that as well with his computer skills.
Absolutely, he certainly does. He's an excellent researcher and has taught me how to search and organize files, and I'm quite literate now, I have to say.
Well, you know, I, as I look, there are some photos inside the book, and I really enjoyed your page, your web page.
Oh, thank you.
It's really cool, and we've got a link to it, and I would highly encourage anyone to go to your page and take a look at it. I really like the map in particular, where you can click on a piece in the garden, and you get a nice photo of what's there.
Yes,
that's pretty cool.
Fun, yes.
And I think Max took some of the. I bet Max took some of those photos.
He took most of them, indeed. Yes, yeah.
You wonder why a garden like that would be abandoned, as it kind of was. Not by you. I mean, you restored it, but how does a place like that fall into such disrepair?
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of commitment. And I think the other thing that was happening is the original house had been renovated by previous families. So it was a question of focus. And it doesn't take very long for a garden to, you know, be overcome with weeds and not look like it's in disrepair. So I think that previous families were perhaps focused on other things, and it wasn't a priority for them, really.
Well, I think anybody listening who has a garden and starts at the beginning of the year hoeing and making sure everything is looking good, oftentimes by the end of the year, by the end of the season, things are weedy. And
isn't that true?
it can go, and you're absolutely right. It can go in all, it seemingly the blink of an eye. You go away on vacation for a week or two and come back, and oh my goodness, things have changed considerably in just a short period of time.
That's for sure.
Well, what was the process? Maybe you could describe. I loved the various parts of it of your property. What wonderful discoveries you had! Talk about maybe the different sections of it.
I think the thing that excited me most was finding the spring-fed ponds. There's three of them, and they feed each other and then go into a bit of an underground river. When we first encountered them, we didn't know where the water was coming from. And I thought perhaps they were being filled somehow, but they don't freeze in the winter. I think our winters are probably comparable here to, we're just north of you. So
yeah.
Although it snows quite a bit, the water keeps flowing. And the reason I like them is there's something so pure about water coming deep from the ground. Consistently, it's refreshing, and it feels like there's a sense of renewal that's constantly happening. So that was very exciting for me. We have visiting ducks that come every year. They say they mate for life. Some people have told me they don't, but the same two ducks come every year. They have for 10 years, and I wait for them every spring, and they leave by midsummer. So I find that quite romantic. there's a very dry, arid slope that not much grows on, but it's about a zone 7 for the gardeners out there. So I was able to experiment with butterfly bushes and some different roses and things that normally wouldn't be able to grow in our climate. There's an area of flat land where my husband tried to get me to plant grass. It's about 80% weeds now. I call it the weed lawn. I don't use any insecticides or anything like that because we have fox. We have a visiting deer, lots of raccoons and hares. So I don't want to disturb the wildlife. So I like weeds. We eat them. They make good salad.
And in fact, you have recipes at the end of every chapter.
I sure do. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And they're all interesting and intriguing. Is pagoda the right term? I'm forgetting now. Yeah. This wonderful structure.
Yes, it's beautiful.
Describe it.
It's maybe a story and a half tall. It's made of old cement and limestone. It's an eight-sided, like a garden gazebo, with a sloped roof with nine levels, somewhat looking like a pagoda. And the interior has a black and white marble and slate floor. It's about 10 or 12 feet across. It's quite large. And it's a beautiful shelter from the rain. It looks over the pond, so when you're sitting in it, you can watch birds nesting around the trees around it and see the water gurgling in the distance.
Oh, it's just, I wanted to jump on a plane and fly up and take a look.
You're very welcome, Larry.
I'm telling you. And I really enjoyed your book. I just finished it last night. We'll be talking some more. We need to take a quick break here. Alexandra Risen is an essayist and blogger, and her book is called Unearthed, Love, Acceptance, and Other Lessons from an Abandoned Garden. And we'll talk more with her right after this look at the news. You stay with us. A garden is not just a place where plants grow. I think there's a whole lot more to a garden, and I think our guest today would agree with me. Alexandra Risen, essayist and blogger. We're talking about her first book. It's called Unearthed, Love, Acceptance, and Other Lessons from an Abandoned Garden. She's a wonderful writer, and she describes her restoration of a forgotten garden and the hidden history she finds along the way. Maybe you've restored an abandoned garden, or maybe you've just started one from scratch. Does your family share your love of gardening? Why do you love gardening? Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. And Alexandra, I was thinking back, and I can't remember where I saw this. Maybe it was in your book, that there is something about soil. There's actually a chemical in soil that will increase as you smell you and take it in, smell it while you're working with it, kind of is a calming, increases your oxytocin levels?
Indeed. It's a mycobacterium that the first research about this was in 2007, published in Neuroscience. And it's a bacterium that exists in soil that has been proven to enhance our mood. So as we inhale it, it increases the production and release of serotonin, which increases our feelings of happiness. So it's good to be out there and getting dirty.
Now, You it surely is, and you didn't do this alone. And I really enjoyed your descriptions of some of the folks that you worked with. And it was a problem finding people, the right kind of people to do the work, the people with the right skills.
Yes, and some of the projects were a little bit dangerous, taking down very tall dead trees, restoring the pagoda roof, for example. And so I wanted to find people that cared about the garden as much as I did, would be careful enough not to get hurt, and that would respect the wildlife and things growing around them. So sometimes it's easy to find people to help you, but they may be more concerned with getting the job done, for example, than the environment they're working in. And because it was such a project from the heart and of love, I was lucky enough to find the right people to work with. It was a terrific experience.
Actually. Yeah, it must have been. You found some wonderful guys. I really... I thought the Italian father and son team that worked on the pagoda were particularly endearing to me.
They're fabulous, and they drop by unexpectedly all the time for a coffee. Never know when they're going to come by, and I'm always happy to see them.
And your cookies.
Yes, indeed. And the secret recipe not in the book.
What did, no, you didn't put that one in.
I didn't.
You're keeping that one a secret. What do you, let's talk about your parents for a little bit. What did gardening mean to your parents?
My parents had a very deep relationship with the land, which it really, I only understand right now. I think for them, it was a way of life. It was a way of healing. It was a way to eat. And they grew up in farmland, and that was just part of their DNA. I was a bit estranged from my parents in my youth. I didn't understand them. They survived World War II, and, you know, we all go through crises with different reactions. My father was a very inward-focused man who internalized all his pain and grief to the point that he didn't speak. My mother was very outward-going and forward-thinking. And as children, we didn't really understand why they were the way they were because they didn't talk about it. And I realize now that many people don't talk about things they've gone through that weren't happy things because they want to look forward, especially with their children. Unfortunately, when we're kids, we just tend to resent what we don't understand. And through the garden, I started to see characteristics of my mother and my father and my sister and the plants. And each plant is, as you know, is very unique and has its own special mysteries and personality. And I started to equate each plant to a person, and that's how I started writing the memoir. Nice. And as I explored more and more my experiences of my youth and my experiences with my parents, the garden became a place of healing for me too, just like it was for my parents, but a little bit differently, but similar as well.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed how you sort of intermingle your youth and then your discoveries and your research on your parents with the garden itself. It was it's a nice way to. I was glad you put the book together that way.
Thank you. Yeah, it just seemed to happen because gardening is a bit of a spiritual occurrence. I think our relationship with nature is sometimes it's subconscious and almost primal. And we don't always understand why we feel better when we're outside, but we know we do. And sometimes that's how we feel about family, too. We don't always understand them, but we love them, and we learn how to appreciate them. And there's a lot of parallels, I think. And so for me, the garden became a portal to understanding legacy. And I think most of us are searching for legacy in some way or another, be it cultural or family or community or historical or personal. And we find different portals. But nature is a very approachable one that worked for me.
Yeah. I want to go back to the ravine for just a minute, because that ravine, that you were really drawn to that ravine.
And
why?
In my youth, if my parents were arguing, which unfortunately happened quite a bit, our house was situated on a ravine in the River Valley in Alberta, where I grew up, which is, by the way, beautiful prairie land and cow country. So I'm sure a lot of your listeners can picture it. But we also had a few natural ravines. And so when I was sad, I would leave the house and go for walks in the ravines. And I spent more time walking in the ravine, I think, than I did anywhere else in my youth. And all those smells of spring and summer and impending snow are just part of me and make me very happy. So I've always had an obsession with ravines, because they're a place of healing and rejuvenation for me, really.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, because as I grew up on a farm, and we had, the farm was the house, and that we're up on a hill.
Mm-hmm.
And down there was a kind of a ravine and a creek that ran through that area, and with trees around it. And I spent so much time as a kid playing along that creek and making things out of the tree limbs or whatever that had fallen down. I can remember making a bow and arrow and some arrows and really developed an attachment, I guess you could say, to the outdoors. It sounds somewhat similar to yours, although I certainly had a different home life than you had.
It does. And do you think our children miss that today? I feel, you know, they say that over 80% of us live in urban environments, and I feel sad that children don't have as much freedom today. And that's something else that I wanted to achieve by looking at plants in their individual ways, is to try and encourage people that even if they're in a park or growing a plant on their balcony, that they can look at a plant differently and more profoundly and see it for all its beauty and characteristics. Even if it's in the middle of an urban environment.
Yeah.
Although I just feel sad that, you know, many kids probably don't have that freedom that you and I did to play.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right about that. I'm really happy that I had that kind of experience. And I try to develop that in on Thursday she'll be 13. As a matter of fact, Emily, to develop that in her, and you tried really hard to and succeed, I think, with Max in that development.
I think I've succeeded. Yes, he is a person of the outdoors and looks forward to going camping and looks forward to hiking and likes to be outside alone. If he has a problem to think about, is happy to sit somewhere and think and be quiet. And that's hard for our kids to do, and even ourselves to do today. The ability to just sit and quietly ponder on something without being distracted and rushing around. So I hope that that's a legacy that he carries into the future for himself and potentially his family.
Yeah. I'll give our listeners one more chance to join in here at 800-642-1234. They're kind of quiet today, which is surprising to me. That normally doesn't happen. But it's fun talking with you, and I'm having a good time, and I bet they are too, listening into this. We talked about what you have, and I'm not sure I did a good enough job asking you to describe what it was like when you first walked down that ravine, when you first got to the house, because what you wound up with versus what you started with is quite different.
Indeed. We needed a machete is what we needed.
Literally.
There were these, this Japanese knotweed, which is a very quick-spreading, tall, maybe 6-foot-plus tall weed that I was reading a few articles recently in the UK where people's property values are actually lower if they have knotweed in neighboring areas near them, because it's considered so invasive and it cracks concrete and so on and so forth. So we had quite a bit of that, completely overgrown, all kinds of noxious weeds and bushes and original plants. A lot of them had died or were being choked. So the first few years of gardening were really cleanup and nothing else. Not the most romantic part, except that sometimes when you're cleaning, you discover things that you didn't know were there. So
That was amazing to me. I thought, oh my gosh, you've been this long and you're just now finding this particular thing.
Yes, it sounds crazy, doesn't it? But
it does.
The other day, my mother-in-law was visiting me and she discovered a very tall, slim plant that I had not seen before, and it's 11 years later, so...
That is really amazing to me. Well, you know, you started your book. I'm going to tell you something. I wasn't sure I was going to like you when I read your prologue.
Yes.
Midwest guy, you know, certain sorts of values that we're all taught with. But you start with your book by going to your father's hospital room, and that it is very raw and emotional.
Yes.
And it must have been difficult for you to write about it.
Because I chose to write this memoir, I had to make a decision to be very honest. And I was. And it is difficult to be honest, especially when one is showing oneself to be less of a person than they want to be. And I think you would agree with me that I experience growth through the story.
Oh, yes.
So I do start showing me at probably not my best. And, you know, it was a conscious decision to be honest. I think that a story is only a story if it's raw and true. And I could see why you felt that way. I don't like the way I was either. But that's why it's important for me to express how we can heal and become better people and become more understanding and accepting of everything around us with time and with patience and with finding something that can bring us back down to what is profoundly important in life.
Yeah. Well, let's take a call. Colleen in Green Bay, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you so much for your show. It's really encouraging hearing this. I'm in year two of rehabbing a garden or our property. Some of the flower beds are 125 years old. We have photos of them from when they were first put in, which is really neat. But one of the most rewarding things for me has been seeing my neighbors' reactions. And even when people would first walk by our house, when we first bought it, the house had been kind of neglected. And people would, you know, look at the sidewalk. And now, like, I've kind of noticed people are perking their heads up a little more and, you know, taking the time to kind of look at, you know, the work that we're doing, which has really been rewarding. And so I was just kind of wondering what your neighbors and the other public's reaction, or do you let people view your property, or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good questions. Thanks, Colleen. Alexandra?
It's a very good question, Colleen. And we're a little bit invisible from the main street, but when people come to visit, it's rare that they don't leave without digging up some plants or going away and feeling like they have to garden too. And I kind of sounds like, you know, that's some of the enthusiasm that you see from people, that when they see you working hard and creating beauty like that and rehabilitating something that's been a little bit let go, it's not only good for you, it's good for everybody that experiences it, and sometimes it makes people want to do the same.
Yeah, and Colleen, you sound like you have lots of enthusiasm in your voice. I can see why that could be infectious. Thank you.
Thanks.
What are some of the nicest plants that you've discovered, Colleen?
So there's some plants I've never worked with before. So I'm actually not from this part of the state. I'm actually from Minnesota. So there's some new, it's a new region for me to garden in too. But I'm becoming a very big fan of native plants and Solomon's seal. And we actually, part of our property used to be an old orchard. So I'm learning a lot about fruit trees right now, which has been interesting. So
wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And you learned a lot as you went along as well, Alexandra.
I did. I'm not so good at Latin names still. Who is? I don't know.
The folks, I have a show called Garden Talk on Fridays, and the folks I have on there are pretty good at it, but we usually go with the common names.
It's
a lot easier, but I wanted to. She mentioned, Colleen mentioned neighbors and you know, kind of liking it. You did have a few issues with neighbors. I remember a piece in part of your book where you were talking about applying mulch.
Yes, some of the process that we went through were a little bit noisy, and I guess I can't say that I blame the neighbors for maybe not liking the noise, which we made. But overall, the neighbors were happy. I think that anything that also is, you know, I think Colleen made a good point about native plants. We really made an effort to add native plants into the garden. And so I think the net benefit outweighed the noise, although that was probably the worst.
And the dust, I think, when the mulch went in.
Dust is not, indeed.
And it was just to it was such a steep, there was no way for the mulch to get in there other than blowing it in.
Yes, and really I didn't even know that one could have a truck full of mulch blown through a tube. I think it's something they do at golf courses and shopping malls or something, but we did it here, and it was quite exciting to have this mulch sprayed into the ravine. The houses on either side of us are very close to our house, and then the slope starts. So there is absolutely no way to get anything down the steps, except for there's maybe a 3-foot wide pathway. So it's very difficult. So that I carry soil and things down in buckets, but that's about the only way to do it.
Yeah, and you have a hilarious description of, getting, funny to me anyway, getting a bunch of rugby players to carry cement and whatever from the bottom of the ravine to the...
Indeed. Yes. Pay them with beer.
Pay them with beer. And they got plenty of good exercise. Well, what's the garden look like now?
Now it's mostly perennials. We've had a lovely summer, so I would say it's overgrown, and my husband is happily pruning away. It's been quite humid, so things have been very happy this year, very, very happy. It's very rich and full, and I have a lot of plants to share, I think, this fall.
And your blog, you have a blog, Foraged Love, and that
yes.
Blog's fun as well.
Yes, I share different things from how to make a willow wreath to cooking with flower petals, all kinds of things that I encounter in the garden. I wish I blogged more, but I do as much as I can. Yeah, some great recipes there.
And again, tell us we have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show to your page, but tell us your site again.
So it's www.alexandrarisen.com.
Alexandra Risen, and Risen is RISEN, if I'm not mistaken.
And feel free to drop me a line and share your garden stories. I love hearing from people about their family legacy, their dogs, and any garden stories.
Well, it's been a great pleasure talking with you today. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed your book.
Super. My pleasure. Thank you so much, Larry.
Alexandra Risen is an essayist and blogger, and her first book is called Unearthed, Love, Acceptance, and Other Lessons from an Abandoned garden. And whether you're a gardener, for sure if you're a gardener, but whether you're a gardener or not, I think you'd enjoy reading her book. It was a fun and interesting one. I'm hanging on to a copy of it. Well, I tell you what, I thank you so much for listening. We've got lots more in store here on The Ideas Net, so I hope you'll stay with us. Stick around.